Hey there, folks. Welcome to Leader of the Pack on the All Paws Pet Radio Network. I'm one of your hosts from Fort Worth, Texas. I'm Susan Herbert, the Lone Star Dog Whisperer, and my co-host is America's canine expert, Mark German.
Oh, well, thank you for having me back, Susan. I love that New York accent of yours. Where is that, Brooklyn? All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show again. Again, we welcome all your questions and comments. You can email us, email our guests at pettalk@live.com. Susan, what do we got?
Well, I'm really looking forward to hearing from today's guest. I don't know about all of you, but when I walk into a traditional animal shelter, I feel like I've just entered a prison. The dogs are isolated. They're locked up in cages. It's a completely abnormal canine environment. Dogs are pack animals, and they thrive when they live and socialize within a pack. Today, we're going to hear from someone who has an innovative plan to modernize our nation's animal shelters industry. Thomas Cole is the founder and executive director of Shelter Revolution. Tom, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Susan. I appreciate it.
Welcome to the show, Tom. Let me start off here with a question for you. Your solution to traditional animal shelters, and Susan and I work in shelters all over the state of Texas and all over the country, but your solution to the traditional animal shelter is to implement what you refer to as the adoption center model. And can you tell us what that adoption center model is?
Sure. Actually, it's not really, even though I chose the name Shelter Revolution, this is more evolutionary. It's just a spinoff of what we already have. We have daycare centers and boarding kennels out that have, for the last 10 to 12 years, they have started some early on dabbled with putting many dogs together in a group, social groups. Now it's caught on and it's becoming the de facto standard in private work, you know, in the daycare centers and boarding kennels. And I look at them and I think, well, why can't at least the private shelters, the ones that are, I hope everybody knows what I mean, but the difference between open admission and selective admission. But selective admission shelters really are very similar and really have very little difference between a daycare center and a boarding kennel and their operation. They screen dogs that they take in. They don't just take in all surrenders. They don't take in all strays. And so really what this is it's based on what's already working in other parts of our industry. It's a communal housing, to put a term to it. I think the best way to describe it would be socialized large groups or communal housing. Obviously, for the sake of small dogs, it's best not to put them in with the large ones because they can get stepped on easily and hurt physically. So some normal, I think I could call them common sense divisions are necessary. In some places, you can have big puppies in with the little dogs, and they do just fine. But you want to, I think, for our purposes, keep the larger bully breeds aside from the smaller dogs, keep the cats over in another area. But essentially, it's just putting dogs and cats into large groups.
Okay, so why is the communal showcasing better than caging?
Well, I think you know the answer as well as I
yes.
do that shelters, whenever you cage an animal, especially a domesticated one, one that for centuries we've had these dogs in our homes, and they don't understand. They're not trained to be caged. Wild, they're like wild animals in a sense. You put them in, and their behavior degrades right from the start. Within a day, they start their aberrant behavior. They start acting strangely. So you can't say there's any one way they'll react, but in every case, it's negative. There's a terrible negative impact on their demeanor. Their whole psyche starts to go down. Some will retract. They'll regress, and they get quiet. They shut down. Others become boisterous and can become very aggressive. Most just, they learn right from the beginning. I have a friend, Robert Cabral, out in Los Angeles, and he and I talk a lot about it because he works with the awful L.A. city shelters. And he works with their 11th hour dogs, ones who are on the list to die today. And he sees dogs, they learn one thing. When somebody comes along the row of cages, comes to their cage, and they look at him, they talk to him, the dog does one thing. He wants everybody to stay away, so what he does is he stands right there at the cage or back a few feet. But some will lunge, but most will just stand there and bark angrily at him. And most people go away. And that's all a dog wants, I think. It's a matter of self-protection. They drive people away, and they learn this very unsocial behavior, and they become almost impossible to adopt. What Robert does is he gets them out, and he shows the people, the kennel workers there, just how easy this dog is to work with. Occasionally, of course, he runs into the real challenge, but for the most cases, you get the dog out of that cage, and their behavior starts to return quickly. You can have surprises, of course. Sometimes an aggressive dog won't show its aggression until they're out of the cage. But in most cases, these are they're docile animals. They're domesticated. They love being around people. They're there to make us happy. And when we cage them, that imprisonment really starts. Well, we do that with human beings, too. Human beings really go downhill fast when they're put into a terrible prison situation.
I remember those days well. excuse me.
Yeah.
So we've only got a minute left before we go to break, but can you quickly tell us if there's any shelters that are already using communal housing?
There aren't any shelters using it in the format that I put forth, but there is one that is really leading the pack. And that's up in Northern California, Sonoma County. It's called, you can Google it, it's Green Dog Rescue Project is their full name. I think it's greendogrescue.org. Don't quote me, but Green Dog Rescue Project is its name. And they do use communal housing. They don't separate rescue dogs from the ones who are adoptable. They put them all together. And I'm a little leery of having people who really don't know their way around problem animals in with them. I want them in with the adoptable dogs, the ones who are ready to go. They've been properly socialized. But
all right,
well,
we're going to have to break really quick. We've got to go, but we're going to be right back, Thomas, and we can finish that. So we'll go to break right now.
Hey, pet lovers, please listen up. I want to introduce to you Nature's Logic, the most natural full-line pet food ever made, and here's why. Nature's Logic is made with a variety of high-quality proteins, such as beef, chicken, lamb, and venison. You will never find any synthetic vitamins, minerals, or anything else synthetic in Nature's Logic. Only real nutritional foods, such as dried blueberries, apples, carrots, cranberries, spinach, and almonds. Foods loaded with natural vitamins and minerals, as made by nature, not a chemist. Nature's Logic is committed to providing the highest quality and safest nutrition for the furry members of your family. So, folks, here's what I want you to do. Visit the Nature's Logic website at naturslogic.com and find a store near you. Nature's Logic can be found in many independent stores throughout Colorado, New Mexico, and Wyoming. So, do your pets a favor and start feeding them Nature's Logic and treat them to the very best. Nature's Logic is truly 100% natural, the way pet foods should be.
When it comes to health expenses, dog owners have it rough. Now, thanks to veterinarian and dermatologist Dr. Kristen Holm, your dog can be goo healthy. There's Doggy Goo to fight environmental pet allergies, Goo Gut Rescue for rescuing your dog's gut health, and Goo Silver, a broad-spectrum supplement for the special needs of your senior varsity dog. So visit HealthyGoo.com today or call 855-246-2426, and your dog can be healthy goo, healthy.
Okay, you're back. We're back. Welcome back. You're listening to Leader of the Pack.
We're all back.
We're all back with Susan and Mark. And right now we are talking with Thomas Cole, founder and executive director of Shelter Revolution. And he's been telling us about his plan to evolutionize the animal shelter industry by implementing a plan he refers to as the adoption center model. Now, Tom, you were just telling us that there's a a group in Northern California that is using this model, and you said there was one thing that you had some concerns about.
Yeah, Susan, the problem that they will probably encounter along the way is that any time that you put rescue, let's call them unadoptable dogs yet. They're there for a reason. They've been returned, they've been surrendered, they were strays, but for one reason or another, they wound up in a shelter. And they may or may not have problem behavior. For those that don't, they're ready to go right into communal housing, and they're properly socialized. You can picture them. They're the nice dogs everybody wants. And every shelter
right.
has some of those. The other ones are the ones that we need to take care of that need some work. And the problem is when you put the adoptable in with the unadoptable, and then you invite people in to that area, into the group, they can easily make errors, and it can be a problem. Dogs can energize just by playing. If you have them in a play group, that's when energy builds, and that's when a problem can develop. Dogs need to have good, solid, trained people around to supervise that, to know when it's no longer play, to know when you have to back it down before it becomes a fight or a problem. And unfortunately, a lot of people are not very knowledgeable when it comes to handling these kind of dogs. They often do the opposite thing they should. And, for instance, I'm trying to show one of my dogs right now and get them adopted. And the first thing this woman did is walk up, and in her highest, squeakiest voice, she sounded like a little rabbit, and bent down, stuck her face right in his. And I had to stand her up and say, please wait, you know. That's the kind of error you get, and that's a potential problem for a shelter, which is what shelter directors are worried about, is this liability factor. And so with my way, it segregates them. You take the unadoptables out, and you deal with them separately. The adoptable animals are marketable. You can put them into a nice place, you can showcase them, and they get adopted very easily. And it's a fun place to go to. You don't have to walk down rows of cages and be depressed and leave worrying that some of the animals are going to die tonight if you don't rescue them. And so it's a real good way to take the next step in our sheltering in this country.
And, Thomas, where's the adoption centers going to get their trained rehabbers, let's call them?
That's where you guys come in.
Awesome.
Where I
fly us out tomorrow.
Well, the problem now is that we really do not have skilled rehabbers. I make a distinction that's a very important one, I think, in this model. We're not training as much as we're training people. They need to be trained. But the animals, when they first come into a shelter, basically these dogs, and this is also true of cats. I don't mean to single out dogs. It's just I'm the dog person in our family.
No, it's okay, honestly.
Yeah.
It's okay.
I think we're talking mostly dog people here, but it also holds true with cats for a bit, for most of this. The problem is that dogs quite often come in with some real screwy behavior because of a crummy family situation, an abusive one, and they've long since forgotten how to be a dog, and they just need to be dialed back, calmed down, and just taught that they're safe and that they can go and play, they can have fun. And they just need some simple boundaries. That's rehab. I don't really as personally care if my dog can perform like a circus performer. That's not what I'm after. I'm a rehabber at heart. Most of my dogs, they'd be hard-pressed to, you know, shake your hand, you know, how you'd say, give me five. My dogs don't learn that. But they all eat together in a large group, and, you know, they get along. They work as a team. So what we need is this small army in our country of rehabbers that can start this process of dialing back the problems, calming these dogs down, getting them so that they're socialized, they can be put safely into an adoption center, they can be adopted out. At that point, that's when trainers can step in and start working with these adopters, you know, to form that bond between the dog or the cat, and the person. But up until then, what we really need is some trained people, because most of our rescuers and fosters really just perform, for the most part, room and board. You know, they're just giving safe haven and some food and shelter to these dogs. And most of them, it's not their thing. A lot of work jobs, they're trying to pay for this work on their own, and they don't have the time, and they haven't been at it long enough, many of them, to actually develop these skills that I've had 50 years to work with, you know, that you guys have focused on so keenly. And that's why I'm so intent on bringing us together, those of us. Cesar Millan was a great one until he went off in his commercial venture. That's what he did. He worked with groups. He called them packs. I just call them groups. But he was a master with these many tough bully breeds. He'd get them in, and he'd work with them, and he'd get them socialized. That's what we need. Those are the dogs that the adoption center can move out the door quickly because they're ready for adoption. Are they perfect? No. But that's where the trainers come in after the adoption. That's when they can really come and start polishing that up. But we need people like you with your academy to work with people, to work professionally in this, to help train volunteers in every community to become rehabbers.
Well, and you know, we talked, Thomas, about this last week, and you know, we are more than happy to do what we can to help with the rehab. And it's, I'm so glad that you do understand the difference between rehab and training, because a lot of people don't. They're looking for trainers to solve behavior issues by teaching the dog skills, and unfortunately teaching a dog to sit, stay down, and all that stuff, just, it doesn't fix the behavior. It doesn't fix the aggression or the fear. So we got to get the dog stable first, and then we can teach them obedience. So I'm glad you understand that, because I'm afraid you would lose some of the success of this if you didn't. We're going to head to break real quick, and when we come back, we've got a few more questions for you, Thomas. So if you'll hang on, we'll head to break.
NuVet Plus, your pet's best friend. NuVet Plus is an immune system builder that is safe for all stages of your dog's life. Helps eliminate most issues, including allergies, scratching and itching, hot spots, arthritis and joint issues, chronic ear infections, tear staining, lack of energy, digestive issues, and so much more. All natural, manufactured in an FDA-registered human pharmaceutical lab here in the USA, using ingredients sourced in the USA. Nothing artificial, no sugars, wheat, corn, or dyes. Never heat treated to help retain all the natural rich ingredients. Comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee and is only pennies a day. Call us Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. 1-800-474-7044. That's 1-800-474-7044. And tell them you are referred by All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Or go online to www.nuvet.com. That's www.nuvet.com. Use order code 33955. Again, www.nuvet.com, order code 3395. Put your pet on the path to good health.
Get in on the fun and the rewards of caring for animals as a professional. Train to be a pet groomer or a veterinary assistant at the Florida Institute of Animal Arts. Turn your love for animals into a lifelong career. There are thousands of jobs in the growing professions of pet groomer and veterinary assistant. We help place graduates. Ask about tuition financing. The Florida Institute of Animal Arts, Winter Park, 407-869-PETS, on the web at myfiaa.com.
And we're back. You're listening to Leader of the Pack with Susan and Mark. We're talking to Thomas Cole from Shelter Revolution about his innovative plan to change today's isolation-based animal shelter system into a communal housing adoption center model. Now, how does your adoption center model fit into the no-kill movement?
Actually, it takes the best of what that has to offer. I see that as kind of a short-term thing. It's a way to turn around a typical prison shelter, one that has relied on killing to control, you know, their population. they come in with a different approach, of course, and they say marketing is the way. We need to get the animals some exposure. We need to get people in homes to bring them in so that we don't have to cage them. Where I take it as a step further in just saying we build on top of that by saying that we can rely on these in-home caregivers, these foster homes and rescuers, instead of just dumping the dogs on them. We train them to become rehabbers, and they take the problem dogs, you know, the unadoptable ones, and the adoptable ones go to the adoption center. It's a way of splitting it. It's like saying, and please forgive my use of business language, but essentially we're taking our product that is ready for sale, and we're putting it out there in a nice merchandising way. And then the product that isn't ready, that has been returned or is damaged in some way, or just became homeless through unavoidable circumstances, you know, foreclosure, somebody gets sick or they die, and this poor animal's left homeless. Well, he may need some help in some areas. They're not quite ready for adoption yet. So they go into these in-home rehab centers. You know, essentially, we're not building big sanctuaries and rehab centers. We're relying on local people who already volunteer, who are already doing this, but we hone their skills, and we create a little army of rehabbers in every rescue community. As they take these dogs in, and they learn how to turn them around faster. I love the term you use, Susan. You said stable, and I think that's the key. I use other long-winded terms, you know, but I think what we're really looking for is a stable dog, one who's mentally stable, who understands his role. He, you know, she enjoys being around people. That's what we're after, and that's what we can do with in-home people. We take that entirely out of the hands of the shelter, this adoption center. They don't even have to worry about it. Any animal that needs some help, even if it's a day or two, we put them into a home somewhere where it's quiet, it's peaceful, and there are other dogs in various stages of development, you know, of stabilizing them. And they learn from others. And these people, these rehabbers, can help them along the way. See? And it actually works very well. I've seen this, you know, I grew up in a shelter and a humane society, and this is the way we did it. And unfortunately, it was just done before the day and age of the web and Facebook, and, you know, we didn't have movies you could put onto YouTube. So none of it was documented before it closed. And so unfortunately, we're kind of starting over from square one. That's where it helps to have one out there, Green Dog Rescue Project, who's at least using the fundamental idea of communal housing to prove that you mm-hmm. can put these dogs together and they won't kill each other, you know, with some
Absolutely.
Care. Absolutely.
My home is proof of it.
Oh. And, Susan, I don't mean to make it sound like there are only two or three of us in the country. Actually, there are many, many rescuers that I've come in contact with who have as many as 5 to 10. There's one I talked to in Alabama who has 20 dogs in her living in her place. She's got a little larger property, 3 acres. And she's got all sorts of animals living in a communal setting right in her home, you know. There are people who are doing this who have, I guess, mastered the skills. You know, they've learned through trial and error. They made mistakes along the way, but they have learned, like we have, that dogs are social. They belong together. It's just the American way that we've gone this thing where we lock them up for 10 hours a day in a kennel. You know, we call that, nicely call it a kennel instead of a cage or a crate. And we go off to work and we come back and then we wonder why our dog acts screwy. You know, he's been alone all day, no interaction with others. Yeah. And then we say bad dog, you know, when they
yep.
bark at the neighbors. And so it's... We have a lot of tradition that has been built into this system that is very unhealthy, that does not work in favor of these animals. And that's what I'm trying to change. I'm just trying to educate people that there's a better way to deal with our canines. And that's why it was so much fun to come across you guys, because you get it. You know, you understand.
Yeah, we've had it for a while.
Yeah.
So why don't the big humane organizations support this?
I think they would if they had more the, and I'm speaking of the shelter directors, the people in charge.
Now, I'm guessing we just lost Thomas. Hopefully we can get him back on to answer this. But I've had the opportunity to talk to Tom a couple of different times, once about a year ago, and then again just last week, and I think this idea, this innovative plan he has is truly one worth exploring and getting more people on board. I don't understand why we continue to, well, I guess I do understand why only humans continually do the same thing over and over and over and don't ever change anything. So we continue to doing the same thing and knowing that it doesn't work. And at some point, somebody has to stop the cycle, the insanity, and try something different. And I think this plan he has is truly a solution that somebody needs to step up and really put a good faith effort in establishing and developing. So I hope
Thomas, how long would it take to implement this new model? Well, realistically, I'd love to say just a few months, but realistically, I think to train local rescuers and fosters in this rehab is going to take a year, simply because you've got old ways, old attitudes that you have to get around. And the problem that when you really get into this, where this bogs down, and I hope you can hear me, is my connection okay?
I can't. I can hear you, but we're going to jump to break real quick, and then we'll be right back, and you can answer that question. Thanks, Tom.
Our dogs are part of our family, an integral part of our lives, providing comfort, exercise, and companionship. All too often, however, this relationship is tested through dog naughtiness and general poor behavior. Our dog does not come when called, digs the garden, and many other issues that create frustration and a break in the relationship we seek. You love him, but you don't like him. Today's e-callers remote trainers have been developed to help you train your dog and overcome these issues that can result in separation from the family and worse. E-collar technology has been developed to help the everyday dog owner. Collars that set limit on the levels of stimulation and therefore limiting mistakes. If you seek a training aid that will assist you overcome the unwanted issues, e-collar technology products have developed dog training technology for the modern world that uses the lowest levels of distractive stimulus to improve behavior and reduce stress. www.ecollar.com. That's www.ecollar.com.
All right, we're back. You're listening to Leader of the Pack with Susan and Mark. And we're talking with Thomas Cole from Shelter Revolution. And Mark had just asked a question about how long it would take to implement the new model of adoption center. So, Thomas, I hated to cut you off, but go ahead and answer that for us.
Sure. Can you hear me, Susan?
I can hear you now. Sorry.
Good. All right. Realistically, I'd say, as I started to explain, I think it would take a year at least to get the rescuers, and by that I mean foster homes and rescuers who work in a group, and the independents who work in any community in this country. You know who they are in your area. You know they're out there. They go to adoption events and so on. But they are at arm's length distance from shelters. And the problem is we can't seem to get the people to work together. At best, what happens is the shelter hands off dogs or cats to local rescue groups. We have to bridge that. There's a divide there. It's a competitive one, and it stems from this old-fashioned way that we've been doing things. That's where most of that first year comes in. Rescue groups can't keep taking this burden on, you know, taking the toughest dogs and the toughest cats without getting some part of that cost covered. And that's where the shelter gets all the benefit. They have the exposure in the community, so the donations come to them much more easily. As tough as they say it is, try getting donations in a community where nobody knows who you are. Rescue groups have a hard time with that, and we need to make that them part of the donation where the revenue coming in goes to them. The revenue doesn't need to. What they need is medical care costs, food costs. They need those kind of costs covered so that they can donate their time and not have to pay out of pocket these exorbitant costs. Just vet care alone can drive some of these people into bankruptcy. That's where this first year comes in, is just getting people to the table to talk, to start lining this out, the sharing, the working together, because it also involves a redefining of jobs. The shelter is no longer going to do the rehab or the training or
the evaluating?
Yeah, behavioral assessment, you know, the evaluating. They do the medical work because typically they have the brick-and-mortar facility, and they can. Some of the shelters in any given community can handle. They have a place where they can quarantine. They can isolate that area and make it a safe place for incoming animals to be vetted, you know, to get the care, to be scrutinized, examined, make sure they're not bringing some disease into the group. Well, that's the perfect role for a certain type of shelter, you know, that has that facility. That's not something rescue groups are set up to do, yet they try to do it, you know, and it's really cumbersome. That first year, we need to work this out. Who's going to do what is what I'm getting at. The second year, we can implement the program fully. That's where, you know, all right, we know the rescuers are now going to be doing the rehab. They're going to be handling, you know, like neonatal care, or if you have sick animals that can be handled at home, we can put them into homes. They don't need to be taking up room in the medical center, you know. These are ways of sharing. We share the burden, but then the glory also gets shared, that good feel when we save lives. Right now what happens is the shelter director gets the credit because their statistics go, you know, their save rate goes up. They get the brag in their annual report, and they get the raise. What do the rescuers get? More cost added on. They've got to go out and try to find funding and the fundraising they have to do. And it's really unfair the way it's set up right now. Now, I'm a very strong advocate for rescuers because I see such incredible commitment from them. On the other hand, there's also some real shabby workmanship. You know, they need help. They need some training. And that's where your professionalism comes in, because you can bring that polish that we need into the home situation. Because many of these people get to a point where they know they can't take another animal on, yet they do. And they exceed their resources and their abilities. And that's where we end up with hoarders. And it hurts the whole industry when we have hoarding situations come to light. Mainly what it is there just isn't a community stepping in to say, we'll help you. You don't need to take all these animals on. We'll find others to help. It's just these huge hearts get in the way. They have so much commitment and so much passion for this. I can't let that dog die. I got to take him. And they go one step over the line, and now they're heading into hoarding.
And if they're not gonna be able to do something different for the dog, then you're just another storage facility.
Exactly. You become part of the warehousing problem, right?
Right.
So the short answer is, I really don't see the program. It takes at least a year, knowing human nature and how divided we are in our rescue communities, having kicked around in this for many years. I actually firmly believe it's a year before we even really start to see any work, probably two before we see any results. The third year is where I'd say we're actually going to be able to measure our impact in the community. I hope that answers your question, Mark.
Well, we're all behind you on this, Thomas.
Thank you. I know. And this kind of coverage really helps, because I've been a lone voice for 8 years actively, 11 years I've been at this. When I got cancer, I couldn't keep working with dogs, and I had to find another way to do it. And it's been a very tough sell, because we have an industry that, like Susan said, it just keeps doing the same thing over and over. About the only major step they've taken in the last 15 years was Rich Avanzino out in San Francisco started a new trend when he had Maddie's Fund put the bill for a brand new thing that they called Maddie's Adoption Center. And really all it is, instead of cages, they put in nice glassed, what they call apartments. And so they put one or two dogs in there, and they think that's really changed things. Well, it's nice for people. We feel good looking in, but the dog is still isolated. And so it really, while the environment has changed, they're still isolated and segregated, and that's not what dogs need. You can give them a concrete floor, put some AstroTurf down or something, and they're happy, but you put them in with 40 other dogs, and I got to tell you, you're going to have a very happy group of dogs. You know, most of the time, they just lounge around. I have some dogs sitting right here. They're not snoozing. They watch me, but they're just sitting here, and they're peaceful and in the right mind, and these were Minnesota's most dangerous dogs when I took them on.
That's great.
You know that feeling. Thomas, you know, when you look around the room and you see these dogs that were out of their mind, that, you know, when you got them, and there they are behaving, happy. You know, it's a wonderful feeling. And I want others to know what we've experienced. There's such joy in that. You know,
I couldn't agree with you more. Yep. Now, we've got to run to our last break before our last segment, and I wanted to thank you so much for being on, Tom. And I really appreciate it, and I wish you the best of luck, and we'll be talking soon, I'm sure.
All right, Susan. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Thomas.
All right, Tom. We'll head to break.
Treat your furry best friend with a clear conscience. Clear Conscience Pet, that is. Everything made by this family-owned company is artisan-crafted in the USA. From family-farmed ingredient sources, holistically formulated for your pet's best health. And just plain delicious. Their treats, chews, and the amazing super gravy food topper for dogs and cats are simply the best you can buy. And the company has won 5 National Nutrition Awards to prove it. Now, Clear Conscience Pet is launching the Sliders brand, a true breakthrough in meaty treats featuring the purest tender meat treat ever made. No grain, no gluten, no glycerin or other chemicals found in typical moist treats. Sliders are pub fun snacks made from lean meats, nutritionally optimized with omega-rich organic flax and veggies. Enter the offer code RADIO at checkout and save 20% at clearconsciencepet.com. Your pets will love you for it.
All right, and we're back. You're listening to Leader of the Pack with Susan and Mark. So it is our last segment, and today for our last segment, we're going to talk about dogs in the news. We have some good stuff today. So, Mark, why don't you start?
When news breaks, we fix it. All right, well, let's talk Detroit for a minute. I know, what they went through in the bankruptcy up there and stuff, but nobody ever stopped and thought about what are all the dogs doing. There's as many as 50,000 stray dogs roaming the streets out there. Because people have lost their homes, they've lost their jobs, and dogs are just fending for themselves out there. They're attacking other animals. There's approximately 70,000 vacant buildings now that provide shelter for the dogs. Not that they're providing shelter, that's just where the dogs are hanging out. Strays are going around. 70% of the strays that are taken to an animal shelter are euthanized. And you know, we have to think about dogs and catastrophes, really, whether it's a hurricane, a tornado, or a bankruptcy. There's dogs out there being affected all over the country.
Yeah, it's Detroit's just has a mess right now. And one of the interesting things that I saw when I read that article was that the animal control officers have found dens of as many as 20 dogs. So basically they're running in packs, and the packs have up to 20 dogs, and they're finding them in all kinds of vacant buildings and everything. But one unique thing about that is that Mark and I have, we get so much critique from people that come to tell us that the pack theory has been basically proven, disproved. And this is proof in the pudding right here. We have 50,000 stray dogs roaming the streets of Detroit, and the animal control officers are reporting these stray dogs are running in packs. Now, how can the pack theory be disproven when we have the situation going on in Detroit right now? I just don't understand it. So all that malarkey and crap we hear about the pack theory has been disproven, I don't even want to hear it anymore. This is proof in the pudding, like I said.
Right. Susan, let's while we have a few minutes, since this is in the news, why don't you tell our listeners where we just were and what we just did? That's news.
Well, yeah, news is we just returned back from Puerto Rico yesterday, actually. Hurried back to do our show today. But we flew to Puerto Rico with a dog that we'd started training 5 months ago to be a service dog for a military veteran that has severe PTSD. We took the dog down on Friday afternoon. And this dog has been just amazing for this veteran in just the few days that they've been together. The trip that we took to meet his family and work with them was amazing. We were just had goosebumps the whole time. This veteran has been waiting 2 years for a dog, and no one could help him because of having to send the dog overseas to Puerto Rico, and it was too far away for some of the other organizations that they had contacted. And this veteran is a true hero. He was in numerous newspaper articles in Puerto Rico. He was a captain, 13 years in the Army. He was a captain and about 6 months away from being promoted to major. He was on his tour in Iraq, I believe it was 2007, and he was 15 days prior to his tour finishing and being able to come home. He was his camp went under attack, and he was just basically his entire insides, probably from his neck down to his waist, were destroyed from a mortar attack. He was heading from his barracks to a shower and did not have his vest on because he was going to take a shower. And his entire insides have been rebuilt. His stomach is lined with plastic. It's just he was tore up pretty bad. 18 surgeries. And obviously the PTSD has been overwhelming. And the dog we took to him, it was amazing. We took the dog down on Friday. On Saturday, the dog spent the first night with the veteran's family. And on Sunday, the veteran awoke to a dog bumping him awake because he was having nightmares at 5 o'clock in the morning. So the dog immediately picked up his job and started to work. And he was just so shocked, so happy, and he said just in the 5 days that he's had Freedom there with him, the dog's name is Freedom, that his life is forever changed. So it was just the most rewarding experience ever. So,
and it was for us also.
Yeah.
Obviously.
It was truly amazing.
Briefly, we have a YouTube video out there of Freedom, Liberty, and Hope, the feral labs that we saved, and again, took one of them, Freedom, over to Puerto Rico from shelter dog, from feral dog to service dog.
Yep. He's an amazing dog. I'm truly going to miss him. I guess the whole thing with these dogs was that it was a big, huge learning experience for both of us. I think just watching how quickly they responded to your rehabilitation program, because most dogs that we work with, if not almost all of the dogs that we work with, have been in a home with someone, other humans, and of course behavior problems set in, and so we have to completely change what somebody else has already taught the dog, and these dogs had not really had human contact. So it was an amazing transformation very quickly. They responded very rapidly, and I'm just really proud of our accomplishments there. But we've got to wrap it up because we are nearing end of our show here. I hope that everyone can jump on the YouTube and watch our video. It's called In Pursuit of Freedom, Liberty, and Hope. It's a great little video, and part two is going to be coming out soon. We have a lot of footage that we took while we were down in Puerto Rico to film part two. But thanks for joining us this week, and remember, you can email us at pettalk@live.com, and I hope everybody has a great week.